SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, it's Thursday the 12th of June 2025. Well, the Australian share market couldn't make it 3 days in a row of record high closes. The market down 0.3%. We'll have the details with Angus Geddes from Fat Profits in a few moments. But first, do you get your financial advice from Instagram or TikTok influencers? And if so, do you know if they're qualified? Well, ASIC has joined regulators from five other countries in a global crackdown on so-called finfluencers who unlawfully offer financial advice online and offered on social media. Together, they issued warning notices, took down websites, while some arrests were even made. And their concerns lie with finfluencers positioning themselves as so-called trading experts, often promoting high-risk, complex investment products without a license. For more, I spoke with Alan Kirkland, a commissioner at ASIC. Alan, how much of a problem are finfluencers at the moment? Because hasn't there been a drop in unauthorised advice?
The really difficult thing for ASIC with finfluencers is a lot of their behaviour is really hard to detect. Some of it happens in closed channels and networks, and a lot of it in individual social media feeds in ways that we don't see. But we are concerned that we're hearing more reports of influencer activity that might involve giving advice that is unlicensed on really important issues in people's financial lives.
Yeah, can you run us through how exactly they're offering this misleading information and how is it hurting consumers? As you just mentioned, it's coming from other channels, but are they predominantly getting people in perhaps via online social media websites and apps, for example?
Our understanding is that they're often getting people in through really common social media apps. They might then try and get them to sign up to a closed channel, but social media is the front door. And in terms of the harm that can happen, it often involves spruiking investments, talking up the returns, talking down the risks. And at worst, that can mean that people are actually putting large amounts of money into investments that can go wrong without them really understanding those risks up front.
Do they often know that they are breaking the law, or is it at times, influencers seeking to gain followers online?
Look, our understanding is that sometimes influencers set out not realising that what they're doing is actually considered to be financial advice under the law and requires a licence. That's why this action that we're taking is so important. So we're going out publicly with a warning to all influencers or influencers that if you're giving financial advice, you need to be licensed or you need to be authorised by a licensee. We're also writing directly to 18 people that we've identified who might be involved in this sort of conduct to put them on notice that they need to be checking that what they're doing is in line with the law.
And this action, it's not just Australia, it's a global action because ASIC's been working with regulators from five other countries. How have you worked together to crack down on this space?
A lot of our work in areas like this is global because the problems are global. Finfluencers are a global problem. They're working on social and media networks that are global networks and they cross geographic and national boundaries. So in this instance, we've worked with regulators from a number of other countries and we're all taking different sorts of action in our own countries, but it's all about sending a message globally that if you're giving financial advice, that is a serious type of service and in each of our regimes, it requires a license and we're willing to crack down if you're giving unlicensed advice.
So what should anyone ask themselves if they are watching these videos on social media platforms in particular and considering advice? How do they know if it's legitimate and authorised advice?
So you should look for a sign that a person has got a licence, or if they're an Australian operator, that they show that they've got a licence with ASIC or they're operating under the licence of somebody who does have a licence. But also some of our general consumer protection advice would apply. So if somebody's promising a return that sounds too good to be true. It quite possibly is, and that's always an orange flag, or more likely a red one.
And finally, for those finfluence out there, the creators, what do they need to do to make sure they are within the law? And are there any, hashtags or anything they need to use to show, hey, we are compliant?
Our best advice is, if you're giving people advice on financial products, so if you're recommending particular types of products, even if that's in a general sense, saying, oh, I think this particular sort of investment is good, then that tends to be financial advice and it usually requires a license. And there's lots of information on the ASIC website about how to go about getting a license if you're involved in that sort of activity.
That is Alan Kirkland there from the Australian Securities and Investments Commission. Let's take a look at the oil markets now, because Brent crude surged overnight by almost 5%, hitting above $70 per barrel for the first time since around early April. And that's on supply concerns amid US-Iranian tensions. For more, Rainer Bosch spoke with the commodity analyst at the Commonwealth Bank, Vivek Dhar.
So look, in terms of what was the biggest driver by far was, I would say, more the UK Navy warning that you should have caution in terms of the ships going through the Strait of Hormuz. Now, that is a strait that is controlled by Iran. And because nearly 20% of global oil supply is transited through that key waterway, you know, it immediately raises alarm bells that could we see some level of violence or escalation in the region. The second part was, of course, which grabbed more of the headlines, was the US evacuating some non-essential staff from its embassy in Iraq, and also optionally telling people in Kuwait and Bahrain, who are non-essential family members, that yes, you can also leave. Now, I'd say that's more secondary. I'd say that the first point of concern is, why is the Strait of Hormuz a point of concern? And I think that's where all the market attention was, and that's what saw oil prices really start surging overnight. And then what we saw in terms of this morning has been prices have receded. And once again, you can just see the different parts of the market interacting, because that was based on mostly Trump's tariffs that he mentioned, that unilateral tariffs are going to be applied, you know, to around 60 countries. And that's going to be announced in 1.5 to 2 weeks. And that scared the market. Demand concerns grew, and that pushed Brent below $70 a barrel.
You mentioned the potential for escalation overseas. What would that mean for the oil price?
So look, it depends how far you think the violence will spread. If you take, you know, in terms of the most logical next point of escalation, I would say it is not violence in Iran. It's to restrict or enforce the current sanctions that US already have. So far, they haven't done that, and that's been a key reason why Iran's oil exports were really allowed to flow during the Biden administration. But that option is on the table, and that can wipe out about 0.5% to 1% of global oil supply. And that is something that is positive for oil, and one that we think supports Brent futures at around that $70 a barrel. But where things can really get out of whack and we can really see prices surge is if we start seeing direct military violence against Iran and key Iranian oil infrastructure. Now, this is where we don't know where things could end up, but if US and Israel get involved in this conflict, you know, you open the door to a blockade of the Strait of Hormuz. And given how key that is in terms of global oil supply, that is where we could see prices jump to $80 a barrel at the very least. So this is where all your scenarios build out and everyone gets worried. So, you know, that's probably where I'd say it's a very low risk, right? And I say that because even everything after I've talked about and the warnings, let's keep in mind that the US hasn't identified any specific threat. And Iran's comments, which were in response to US escalation, if, you know, Iran-US deal falls over in terms of a nuclear agreement. So it's not something that has exploded, but certainly the market has shifted its tone and is watching this space pretty closely.
Given, though, the volatility of the oil price and the way that it reacts to such news, what could this mean for motorists, for instance, for things like the petrol price?
Look, if we do see oil jump to about $70 a barrel and it stays there, we're really talking now, you know, the national average for petrol prices going up to about $1.85 a litre. Right now, that's not outside of the range that we've seen of late. So that's certainly, you know, the expectation in terms of the national average. But if we do see something like $80 a barrel, we're probably talking somewhere closer to $2 a litre.
And in the case where we continue to see the Australian dollar rise, as it has been recently, what are we looking at then? I mean, where are you projecting the AUD to go to, and how much of an impact will that have?
Yeah, look, our forecast is for the AUD to rise gradually, right? And, you know, it's say at 65 cents now. It could rise to by end of this year by about 67 cents. So it is marginal, but it is going to be positive for motorists in that it should deliver cheaper petrol prices. But I would say that it's not going to be the dominant driver. It's really going to be where that oil price sits. I think right now that is going to be the key factor to watch if you want to see what the petrol price does.
Nothing says summer like a rich, creamy ice cream float from Skyline. Made with two scoops of fresh vanilla ice cream and your choice of Barq's Root Beer, Barq's Red Cream Soda, or any of their Coke products. At participating Skyline locations while supplies last.
That's Vivek Dahl there from the Commonwealth Bank speaking with Raina Bosch.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
So the Australian share market couldn't make it 3 days in a row of record highs because the S&P ASX 200 fell today. A lot of that coming at the end of the session because the index closed down 0.3% to 8,565. Still, remember, the market is up around about 17% from the April low. So to tell us more about where the market's going, I spoke with Angus Geddes, CEO of Fat Profits.
I think the Australian market's benefiting from two factors. Firstly, we've got more rate cuts coming, and you know, without question, that's going to be a shot in the arm for the economy, discretionary spending, and certainly a boost for the stock market. And secondly, I think Australia's benefited from safe haven buying. So some of this capital that we've seen reallocated out of the US, some of it's finding a home in Australian stocks, and you know, Australia is being perceived as a safe haven.
That buying, is it across the board, or is it just your big blue chips, your major stocks, and how much of it is from local and those international investors?
Look, I think it's pretty much at the big end of town, mainly the ASX 200. You know, a lot of it's gone into stocks like CBA. You know, one of the most expensive banks in the world, $300 billion market cap. And we've just seen indiscriminate buying in some of those bank stocks. So, you know, that would be, I think it's the larger end of the stock market that's really been the beneficiary here. Those large, big liquid Australian stocks that can absorb that foreign buying.
Now, what about the implication of the US trade tariffs, right? We know that US inflation came in a little softer than expected overnight, up just 0.1% in May. What does this say, do you think, about the way US businesses and consumers are dealing with tariffs and the potential effects on prices?
Well, I think, look, we're going to get a bit of inflation in the US, but, you know, the perception really is that if the inflation rate does tick up, it'll only be transitory. It'll be a blip on the road, and that there's going to be a pathway through, given that the White House has, you know, sort of pivoted and doesn't want, obviously, these very bad sort of initial level of tariffs to really knock the US economy around. So I think, look, on balance, the market's looking through to a better negotiated outcome on trade, and that includes China.
So if inflation is transitory and if we're seeing these softer than expected numbers, does it mean lower interest rates for the US? Because what we've seen overnight is Donald Trump post on social media calling for a full 1 percentage point cut.
Look, I think we are going to get rate cuts. The question is in the US, the question is when. The markets are pricing in potentially up to 5 interest rate cuts. This year, later this year and next year. We know that Jerome Powell, head of the Federal Reserve, his term is up in March next year. And already, you know, there's been speculation that Trump's going to replace him with Scott Bessent who could be quite dovish and certainly dance to the easier monetary policy sort of regime that the Trump administration wants.
We talk oil prices up almost 5% overnight on concerns US-Iran relations are souring and potential strikes given Iran's nuclear policy. How's all this flowing through to markets?
Look, I think the markets are not too worried about oil at $65. It's still a long way down from where it was a few years ago, so it's not an inflationary impact. But certainly, the higher level of crude prices that we've seen reflects that instability going on in the Middle East. And certainly, if things were to sort of heat up between the US and Iran, over that nuclear policy, we could see further upside in energy prices.
And finally, with the market at record levels, right, how are you feeling as an investor? What are you telling your clients and are there opportunities out there?
Look, we're bullish on Australian stocks. I think it's been some time since we've been in an easing monetary policy cycle with interest rates coming through. We've got a high conviction call that the RBA will cut at least four times between now and next year. Taking the cash rate down to, the low threes, and that's going to be a big shot in the arm for the stock market and for earnings. And I think, on balance, given the Labor government got such a big mandate, they're still spending quite a lot at the government level. That's going to keep the US economy on track in terms of growth.
So just how high do you think the ASX 200 can go and why?
Look, if I'm right in terms of the resources sector having a run, and it's pretty cheap at the moment in terms of those large diversified resource stocks. My view is that the ASX 200 could get to 9,000 within 12 months, and certainly if we get those rate cuts coming through and a bit of upside coming through on commodity prices.
That is Angus Geddie from Fat Profits there. Don't forget, if you do enjoy the podcast, to give it a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and to click subscribe.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.